Activist Radio can be heard Thursdays 5 to 6 p.m. on WVKR 91.3 FM at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York. Sundays 4 to 5 p.m. on WIF 104.1 FM in Woodstock, New York. And Sundays 5 to 6 p.m. from the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Past shows can be heard on ClassWars.org. Please like our Facebook page, read our Class Wars blog for commentary on today's interview. We'll be here next week at the same time to help you become part of the resistance.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Dear KBOO community, we are currently on air through a temporary broadcasting system. You can stream on our site and our app as well as listen to the dial. However, at the moment, we cannot support live programming. We're working to solve this power outage issue as possible. Stay tuned for update, and thank you for supporting your community radio station, KBOO, Portland.
Proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society concert series continuing Saturday, January 21st with Canadian singer-songwriter David Francy. David Francy is Scottish-born Canadian carpenter-turned-songwriter. The Folk Music series of concerts continues Saturday, January 21st at 7:30, Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. The concert series continues through May. Ticket information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events.
You can follow KBOO on all your social media platforms. Just look for KBOO on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Get access to our new content news, as well as special offers and contests. Like and share your favorite community radio station, KBOO.
Here at KBOO, we honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on. The Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tomwater, Wet'lala Bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin Kalapuya, and many other indigenous tribes and nations of the region of the Willamette River and that great river known as Shuaneku, Wimal, Nishaiwana, and Columbia. Many names for the living water force that has sustained this region for countless generations and provided phenomenal life to our blessed ecosystems. We believe it is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationships to each other and the living world.
Hi, this is Walt Perezeta with the group Chicago, and you're listening to KBOO FM.
Hello, and welcome to For the Wild podcast. I'm Ayana Young. Today we are speaking with Veda Austin.
I believe that water is not a resource, but it is source.
Veda is a water researcher, public speaker, mother, artist, and author. She has dedicated the last 8 years observing and photographing the life of water. She believes that water is fluid intelligence, observing itself through every living organism on the planet and in the universe. Her primary area of focus is photographing water in its state creation, the space between liquid and ice. It is through her remarkable crystallographic photos that water reveals its awareness of not only creation, but thought and intention through imagery. Well, Veda, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. I'm really looking forward to and interested in seeing how our conversation flows with this topic of water and all that will come from it.
Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, gosh, there's so much to ask you, but I really want to ground this conversation in reverence for water and our relationship to it rather than just going over specific water research, although I'm also interested in that as well. So just wanting to kind of preface us with that. And I also want to read something from your website where you explain, quote, "Water is our constant companion. From the moment we are conceived, it is always with us, even upon death. It is water that evaporates from the physical, rising upwards into the heavens," end quote. So, yeah, speaking of reverence and water, not only as a life companion, but as a force, I'm just thinking of the ubiquity of water across life through the water cycle, the way water passes through the oceans, streams, air, and earth to our bodies and back and forth and so forth. And I guess I'm wanting to start with a question of, you know, how does intensely focusing on water remind us of our interdependence and interconnectedness within the world?
Firstly, I don't think that we can separate ourselves from water. And that is because we are bodies of water. And we see ourselves when we look in the mirror as a very solid kind of looking person. But we're only ever a cut away from leaking, or an ocean away from leaking, or a toilet break away from leaking, or an exercise away from leaking. And yet, even though we look at the entire world through the lens of water, because our eye lens is 99% water, we forget that there are tributaries and streams flowing through our body, just like on Mother Earth. And so one of the first places that I start when I go into schools and talk about, I say to them, if your skin was invisible and your organs were see-through, what would you look like? And how would you recognize your parents? And when you think about that, the way we recognize our loved ones tends to come back from the way in which they sound and the way in which they energetically feel. And I think that as far as our connection with water outside of our body goes, I believe that water is not a resource, but it is a source. And that we're all flowing back to the ocean of bliss. I think that all life holds water within it. So in many ways, I think that water is always observing itself, always in search of itself. So I think that all bodies of water are really in search of themselves. They are observing themselves from every perceivable perspective. Even when we are looking for life on other planets, we're always looking for water. But the interesting part is that we say that there is no life without water. But in fact, not many people are willing to say that water is alive or living. And it's interesting because when you look back at ancient and when you look at indigenous cultures, you see that there's a very different relationship that they have around water and nature. In fact, the Maori, my dad is Maori, which are the indigenous people of New Zealand, the word we have for spirit is wairua, which means two waters, the physical waters and the spiritual waters. And I believe that there are these two streams within us of the physical and the spiritual in relation to water.
It's really interesting to think back and imagine a time when culturally our connection and our reverence and our understanding of water was so much more, I don't know if authentic or holistic or I don't know, right? I'm trying to find the word, but I wonder if in your reflections, you can look back in history and see where there was a break in, and it's, I don't want to say our culture, there are so many cultures, but Clearly, something has gone really wrong when we see how water is so disrespected. I guess where my mind is going right now is thinking about fossil fuel extraction and the toxification of water and dumping in rivers and streams and even drinking poisoned water as if it's natural. So I know at some point in our human history, however many of our cultures shifted into this complete other worldview. And I guess I'm just wondering if you've noticed when that switch started to happen or why? Why are we here?
Well, I mean, there's been a clear change in our language, which is indicative of a clear change in how we treat water in a more physical sense. So quite some time ago, there was a different word that we used for water. We didn't call water water. We called water the waters. And there was an idea that the waters were, in fact, like a body of water, a physical manifestation of a water body. And so there was the reverence with the word the before it. And then in Roman times, when they made and built plumbing, the word water or the waters turned into water as we started to observe that water takes away our waste and began to perceive it in a slightly different way, or in actually a very different way. And then as time goes on, so often now we tend to do this very reductionist kind of way of looking at science quite often, and the letters H2 and then, you know, O, H2O, it's been reduced to H2O. And so the only word that I can think off the top of my head where the waters still applies to a sacred body of water is when someone's water breaks, when we say her waters break when she's about to have a baby. And so it's quite interesting when you look at how we use water rather than use it for a sole purpose of drinking or bathing or cleansing. When people started to see that it took away effluence, they began to also visually perceive it differently. And because we are such visual beings, and you know that quote, seeing is believing, is very real for most people, that idea that water can also be full of effluence kind of started to make a shift. Even though we knew that we needed it to survive, there was this kind of visual that we had where things just made a slow decline in the way in which we respected it. But that's not obviously all cultures, but that is one area where a lot of industrial kind of changes started to happen, even though it made things more quote-unquote kind of sanitary. But there's probably other ways in which we can actually do things in the world. And I think that more and more people now are beginning to realize what some of those things are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see how the shift of language and really impacted the way that we thought of water. And it's sad to see how far we've come from being in right relationship to water. And I think even considering the words holy water and how there's a differentiation for people between water that's holy and water that's unholy. I guess I wanted your perspective on this. I think where my mind goes is, if all water is holy, would we then treat water a lot differently, considering that it is all interconnected and it seems almost impossible to separate water from waters?
Well, I would suggest then, I mean, if you just apply that then to people, is that, you know, we kind of carve out people who are, we term as holy, and say they're holy. But those holy people will often remind us that so are we. And I think that one of the things we do in the world is whack labels on stuff. They're really, really good at that to make us feel safe in an environment which might feel unsafe if we had no boundaries. And also, I think that, you know, we are in a very kind of, there's a lot of polarity. And so when we say, you know, I hear people all the time saying, you know, this water is, you know, terrible. You have to drink this kind of water, and this was that, and this water is this, and blah, 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 blah. Yes, there's some physical aspects to the fact that there is certain water that is unfortunately not able to be drunk because, on the whole, you know, people have put so much chemicals and waste into the water, and we haven't figured out other ways to kind of, you know, make water quote unquote clean. It's all about being clean. And this term of holy is all about being cleansed and being clean. You know, I think in some ways, this is one of the things that's almost problematic, because there's this idea we're unclean. There's this idea that we need to be cleansed. There's always this idea that there's something wrong with us. And this is just such a big thing throughout the world, is that we're always trying to get better. We're never somehow perfect. We're never, there's, you know, and I think that these things, if it's like as you do your own inner work and your own journey into, like, if, you know, becoming a kind, good person, and that includes being a kind, good person to yourself, a big part of growing older and getting wiser is about beginning to actually like yourself and being comfortable with the reflection that you see in the mirror, and not being so critical, not being so dualistic, and not being so just kind of thinking that there's always someone better than you. Because really, I mean, that idea that we're all connected, it's so cliche. Unfortunately, it's just thrown around, like, and nobody really, not many people really sit and think with this idea that we are connected. But if you consider that by molecular count, not by volume, we are 99% water, and that there is evidence out there to suggest that water sitting next to, like, and I've done this, and various other people have done different tests, where you can have water, which crystallographic structures. So I basically, my area of expertise is in crystallography. I have discovered a technique of short-term freezing, whereby I'm able to see very specific patterns in water and photograph them. And so tap water has a signature pattern, and that is a very disordered, broken kind of icy pattern, whereas spring water's signature pattern tends to look like hexagons in a star shape, with these kind of ferns that coming off each arm. And when you put tap water beside spring water and you leave them overnight, what happens is that the tap water improves and begins to look more like rainwater, which has a signature pattern of kind of like fan with a slight curve to it, which is a big improvement. So it's improved by sitting next to the spring water, but the spring water's structures begin to also improve, and you start to see more hexagonal patterns, or you start to see other various patterns which I've identified as to be healthy. And so both improve. And I think that is the nature of water, is actually that of the being the observer. The observer aspect is more of the spiritual. I think in the physical, the aspect of water is also extremely influential, and in a positive way. So that its nature is to improve things. And I think across the board, that's actually that really the natural nature of water is to improve things. And so we are bodies of water, you know. And so when we come into this idea of holy water and people being blessed, then I think there is a very real aspect. I'm not saying that holy water isn't real, but I'm saying that I do think that it would be really, really nice if we could realize that we are all holy water, all of us, and that within these bodies of water, we have choice. So there comes free will. But if you took away the aspect of our personality, we are holy bodies of water, undoubtedly. And I think then that takes away this concept of good and bad. That's a bad person, that's a good person. If you took their personality away, if you took that away, then they are bodies of water. And we are very, very quick to even talk about how much we've damaged this, we've stuffed the environments, this is happening and everything's terrible. And, you know, all we hear is bad news. It's like, where's the good news? And the good news is there is actually good news. Firstly, we are a living, breathing, sacred, divine body of water and soul and memory. We're an ocean with a memory. And I think that that's so beautiful, because when we look back at our life, everything is a memory. And right now in this moment, the beginning of this podcast is now a memory. We're creating memories. And when we leave this body, one of the greatest gifts that we leave for everyone else is a beautiful memory in their heart. And so I feel like there is such a lot of perception that everything is stuffed and that actually we somehow that reflects inward onto us as people. And I think that one of the things that water keeps showing me, reflecting to me, is that actually, you know, we're beautiful in so many ways. And that seems so, I think that there are things that we could do better, but I think that we know that. And so it's now more of just doing them. So we talk a lot, but we're very aware of what needs to get done. And there are people doing amazing things out there to help clean the oceans, to help do things, to help people get clean water to drink. You know, I know those things are actually going on. I speak to those people daily. So in my world and my perception, there are things that are actually happening that are incredible to make things better. And I think there are holy bodies of water doing very whole things every day, including the mothers and the fathers out there that are raising their children, including the people that are going to a job they don't like because they have to feed their children or their families or themselves, and they just don't know another way out, and that is what they have to do. Or for all of the people that have lost their jobs over the last few years because of the craziness of the world, everybody has this, all of the feelings and all of the emotions and all of the experiences that we have had in this world are also memories now. But they are very sacred, those memories, I think, because they help us to shape the future, because we base how we view the world on those memories. But we can also make new ones. You know, that's the most amazing and beautiful part about this being human, about being alive and being able to think. We can make new memories every single moment. And in any moment, we can change our life with a change of perception. So I've been in many different cultural environments where people have used holy water to bless and use it as blessings. And in India, I've spent a lot of time there. The water that bathes the feet, because the feet are considered to be sacred, especially from a saint or guru, as they may call them. And that type of water is said to be able to heal people if you put it on wounds or if you drink it, all kinds of things. So, you know, in different more religious and Christian ways, there's holy water, you know, for baptism and these kinds of things. But is it the intention that's in the water that's making the difference, or is the water already holy? I think it's the fact that we just start to attach our good intention into the water that is already holy. And that just makes it all the more special to us, because our life is such a perception of life, you know. And I feel like I just think that if we could really see ourselves the way that water sees us, even tap water, that has just got such a different kind of structural imprint. Water is so grateful. That tap water is so grateful when we just hold it to our heart and give it love, that it changes structurally to look more like spring water. I've seen some of the biggest structural changes, of which I look at as a energetic state of health in water. The reason I say that is because tap water chemically doesn't change, but it structurally changes. And it structurally changes the most when human consciousness wraps it up in our love. And so what we see is an absolute sign that even the tap water is grateful for affection. And when I asked a whole bunch of children if they were to set an intention, what would it be? Every single one of them said the same thing, and I spoke to them at different households, so they weren't all together in a bunch. All said to be kind to people. And I think when you just boil it all down, just be kind to each other, be kind to ourselves. I think that holy water is an embodiment of what it is to be kind.
That's really beautiful. I just have been getting completely lost in your stories and feeling really moved. And I want to continue meditating on baptisms and ritual bathing and the importance of submersion and even being in water before birth. You feel like we're starting to touch on these themes and maybe even hear about your own healing journey with water.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot to unpack in all those topics. So, you know, one of the things that I say about immersing yourself in water is that when you're in the bath and you lie back and you even put your head or ears under the water, one of the first things that water reminds us of is our breath and our heartbeat. When your ears are underwater, what the water reminds us of is that kind of shh, shh, shh noise, and that noise we would have heard in our mother's stomach. And it is a very primordial kind of sensory feeling of being submerged in water, because you really do hear that innate intelligence speaking to you, because we don't think about the fact that our heartbeat is beating unless we really go into a meditative space and focus on it. In fact, we're on autopilot most of the time. So when we're actually immersed in water, water reminds us of the things that are working within us that we are not even able to hardly stop. For example, and this tends to always happen publicly, you know, when your tummy is making all kinds of noises and gurgling and digesting food, and we can't stop it, and it often happens when someone's speaking and it's really quiet and your tummy's just making noises, and it's like there's nothing you can do to stop that. Outside of holding your breath, there's not much you can do to stop breathing, because you're going to start breathing again sooner or later. And, you know, there's all of this intelligence making our body work. And we don't tend to think about the fact that we are this fluid, intelligent body of water, minerals, salts, and consciousness. If you pardon the pun, that's really, if you boil it down, those are the things we are made of, that are actively working to keep us alive in this physical body. And so I think it's quite interesting, this idea of, it comes back to me again to how we perceive water. And if we perceive bodies of water as holy, then we need to also perceive our own body of water as holy. And what is even the definition of holy? And we can get into that later. But my personal healing journey, I'll try to do a short version, because otherwise this is going to be kind of a long podcast. But I was in a horrendous car accident 24 years ago or so. We went under a Citan truck, rolled twice, and the driver died immediately. And over the course of 20 years, I had 8 surgeries. And on my 8th surgery, which was for a bowel surgery, because the seatbelt had crushed all my internal organs and broke my collarbone, and I had internal bleeding and all kinds of stuff. So the doctors found that I had had some complications, and that they found that during the anesthetic, my body had developed these blood clots in my lungs, and they wanted me to be on warfarin for however long, potentially the rest of my life. I was in my early 20s then, and I really, really didn't want to have to do it. I didn't want to take warfarin. It didn't feel good for me. So the accident was in my early 20s. So this part was like 20 years later. And so very much in resistance to taking blood thinners, but they said you have to do it or you'll die. So I did for around about 3 or 4 months. And they did an x-ray. They found that clots had gone, and they were encouraging me to continue to take the medicine. But I believe everyone should have a choice as to what they do with their own body. And for me personally, it didn't feel in alignment with what I wanted to do anymore. So I believed that my body could heal itself, and that I could do it naturally. So I became the kind of guinea pig of my own health in many ways. And, you know, I've already lived a fairly healthy life. I didn't drink or smoke or take drugs, and I've been vegetarian since I was 8. So I was really quite surprised that had actually happened. But when you have had, you know, 8 surgeries, that's a lot of anesthetic, so that these things can happen. So I ended up speaking to a medical doctor friend of mine who also practiced Vedic medicine, and he said, you know, why don't you try drinking a natural, emphasis on natural, high alkaline water that might help to stabilize your body. So I thought, wow, if I only have to drink water, then, you know, that can't be that hard. That sounds pretty good. So I started drinking lots of different types of alkaline water. And in New Zealand, even our rainwater on the whole is around about a 7.2. So it's slightly alkaline. So the alkaline range is from a 7.1 up to like 12. And then from 6.9 all the way down to 1 is acidic, and 7 is neutral. And that is distilled water, is meant to be neutral. So I did 2-week trials drinking alkaline water from various different springs around New Zealand. And I did change my diet. I didn't do anything different with my skincare or makeup or anything. And so I didn't notice any huge changes in the beginning. Different waters just felt kind of hydrated. But again, we don't see the workings of our body because we just see the skin. So we don't really know, other than what's going in, what's coming out. It's fairly good indicators. And so eventually someone said to me, because I had a wellness center, and someone said, look, I know this old guy has got his own private water source. It's a 9.9 pH straight out of the ground. It's a spring, and he's only giving it to cancer patients. Maybe he'll give you some. So he gave me a month's worth of water to try after I told him my story. And within 3 days, I noticed a huge change in bowel motions. It's obvious, it's a topic a lot of people don't want to discuss, but it's such an indicator of your internal health. And after having such bowel surgery, it was very relevant to me. So I noticed a really positive change there. So many people in the world are sitting on the toilet trying to push out a pebble for an hour, and they're grossly dehydrated. In fact, that it's now estimated that nearly 100% of people are actually dehydrated on some level in the world, which seems extreme. But where we're getting our hydration from, you know, I think that we can also look at what we're eating. So you can, of course, drink water, but there is this idea of what kind of water you're drinking, quality of water, and you can look at eating fourth phase water, which we can get into. Fourth phase is more of a gel plasma-like water that you can find in watermelons, that you can find in coconut water, that you can find in cucumbers and aloe vera and all these kinds of things that are more of a plasma and very hydrating for you. So there are lots of different ways to be hydrated, and hydration is almost like a whole nother topic. So I think it was around day 10, I noticed all these bumps coming up along my arm and jaw that were really painful. And there was one really angry area, which just looked, when I put my finger over, it was felt sharp and sore. So I ended up getting some tweezers, and gross as it sounded, I was like digging around, and I pulled something out that was green and sharp. And it was a little bit of green glass. And over the course of day 10 and 12, 27 pieces of green glass came out of my arm and jaw that had been in my body for, you know, 20 years, because the man who had died in a car accident, he had a nightclub, and in the back of the car were these crates of Steinlager beer, and those beer bottles were green. And when we rolled, they smashed one particular side of my body, and I got the other side got more windscreen. So I realized that, you know, this is amazing. This special spring water that I had been drinking, it was literally purging glass that had been embedded in my body for 20 years out. And I was very curious how that had happened. And so I started trialing other people with this water who were part of coming to my wellness center and who wanted to participate. And I very methodically took down all their details and saw them every week and weighed them and did all kinds of stuff, like over a period of 8 weeks with them. And each person had some very positive result. If it was someone very, very healthy, it gave them that incremental improvement in energy that really high-performance sports people really are looking for, all the way to everybody's eyesight improving, to people's memories improving, to fertility issues improving, to weight loss for people that needed to lose weight, to all different manner of ailments, in this, even depression. And so I noticed such a marked change with everyone. I'm like, what makes this water so different? And I started to be curious about its properties. The first place I looked was basically analyzing what the water was, what it had. And so obviously it had a high pH, but it had a high bicarbonate, it had silica, it had various minerals, it had a different kind of texture even. It was very smooth, it was very, almost a little bit viscous. It had a negative charge, which means it had a negative ORP, which meant it was basically healing you rather than oxidating you. There were lots of really interesting things about it. And I went down the very sciencey road of trying to figure out what made it different. But I think that there are these kind of medicine waters all around the world, and that they're not in every single place, but they are dotted around the world. Often one of the telltale signs of them is that they have dissolved hydrogen in them. And so this water did have a little bit of this dissolved hydrogen that you could tell. So there was definitely something special about it. But I started to think, well, I think there's more to it. Like, what else? What am I missing? You know, I'm looking at this analysis, but all I'm looking at is what the water holds. You know, what if I take away all of the things that are on this big list of what's in it and look at the water itself? And so that's kind of what I was talking about a bit earlier in a very rudimentary way, which was like, if you take away the personality, what are you left with? And of a person I'm talking about. And so, you know, it's interesting because when I started to look at water as an energy, what water holds seemed different. So when I looked at this body of water that had helped heal me and so many other people, I saw this aspect of this water as a very nourishing medicinal energy. And as you go through and you get to really experience being with different bodies of water, and you don't focus on all of the things that they're holding, whether it is tap water. Tap water is holding so much. But imagine if that is that, if you kind of imagine it, you know, you hear this idea of holding space. It's like people holding space for people. And I didn't really understand what someone holding space really meant. I mean, I'd heard the term, but I hadn't really felt that. I was in Kansas last year, and I was on this breathwork course with a guy called Andrew and his partner, Michelle. And there were like 50 or so people in the room, and Andrew was holding space for every single person there. And when he came and he just stood there, and I could feel him there holding space for me, and I was going through some pretty emotional stuff. And I could just knowing he was there holding that container really, really made a difference to my feeling of safety. And I felt so safe to express in that container he had presented. And so I think of water in its energetic state as kind of like being holding space for whatever it has to hold. And I have so much respect for our municipal tap water because it's having to hold all the shit. Whereas the spring water just gets to just be in this beautiful, pure state. It doesn't hardly have to use energy very much at all to hold space. Whereas the tap water has had so much interaction with the worldly world, with the material world, that it's holding so much space for us. So when I have a very different view, because I really sat with these different bodies of water, with the ocean water in different areas where the beach, you know, where it comes and laps up at the beach, each one is so different energetically. Each one is holding a different space for the world. And these, I mean, it's interesting, just as a side note, that the word sand is a mix of sea and land. And it's this interesting place where the water is in between. It's like on the land, but still part of the sea. And it kind of comes into these spaces that I call the subtle realms, or the in-between spaces. And that's very interesting to me, because where I freeze water, it's in the state between molecular chaos and molecular order, between liquid and solid. These in-between spaces, I always say the secrets are in the subtleties. And I feel that this is a very true statement, that the in-between places, the in-between realms and the in-between worlds are really where all the magic is. And Arthur C. Clarke says that magic is only science we haven't understood. And so I feel, you know, that I think I've covered quite a bit of territory. Hopefully I've answered that question.
Thank you. divine remembering. Holding on too tight, trying till I'm tired from the fight. Divine surrendering.
Wow, I have been enthralled the whole time you've been speaking. And yeah, I'm just amazed and thinking back through my relationship with city water and suburban water and spring water and the different flavors and tastes and textures it's left on my skin, and just being grateful for water, the fact that it can even get piped into a home. I mean, it like all these memories kind of flooding in me of my relationship with water as you've been speaking. And just, yeah, I'm totally floored by what you shared about your own healing journey. And I can already tell I want to have a second conversation with you because there's so much to explore. And I just began looking through my notes, and there's maybe a few other topics we can go over while we're still together, at least this time. Well, there's two things that I want to be able to touch on before we go. One, the smell of rain and the relationships between life forms water fosters. And then I also want to talk about the fourth stage of water, water as liminal, water as liquid crystal, which you touched on a little bit explaining. But I don't know if there is either one of those that you'd like to touch on or begin explaining to us, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Sure. I mean, we innately know that smell of rain because it's really caused by the water from the rain along with certain kind of compounds and plant oils and various and ozone and different things in the soil. So it's kind of like this certain smell, I guess. It's a very earthy smell that's associated with rain. And so, you know, we are so sensory, and we have these senses to experience all kinds of things. But I think that earthy smell of rain is a very, thing that most people can go, oh yeah, it smells like rain, or it feels like rain. We can feel it, not just smell. There's a feeling that comes before rain happens. And it's because water recognizes itself. You know, we can sense it. We can tell when it's coming. We have this kind of anticipation for it sometimes. There is, we are a body, you know, we are nature. Of course, we are more in tune with nature than we think we are. Even the people that might not get out there very much or might not have the opportunity to feel as connected, just the fact that we can even smell this earthy, beautiful smell of when rain's about to happen or when it's just starting to spit. And there's so many beautiful stories around rain. In New Zealand, the concept, the Maori concept of they are the tears of the father missing the mother because their children pushed them apart so that they could breathe. And the mother and the father came together, Mother Earth and Father Sky. They used to have no separation. They came together to make love. And all of the children were born in between them, and they were like, no, we can't breathe, we can't breathe. So they pushed them apart. And every time it rains, the father is missing the mother. And so his tears really create all of the different water systems within the Mother Earth. And I think that ultimately, when we sense and feel and smell water, we are in fact remembering our father, the masculine aspect, and this love, this intimate love. You know, there is this intimacy about being drenched in rain water. And the other day, people thought people think I'm crazy, but I was with my stepmom and it was absolutely pouring down. We've had so much rain in New Zealand lately and it was really torrential. And we were at a cafe, and my stepmom said, "Oh, I'd love to take a photo of you with the background of the rain. I'm like, how about you take a video of me in the rain?" And I basically ran out into this pouring rain. There were people all huddled around different, like, kind of stores, just waiting to like it for it to settle down, because it would have, you know, it was full on. Within 3 seconds, I was completely drenched, and I was like dancing around in the rain and looking at all the people like looking at me, and I'm like, we're so afraid of even getting wet, you know. And it was so much fun. And even though it was wet and cold afterwards, it gave me this such a fun sense of, like, such a fun memory. You know, it was such a lovely moment in time. And then the fourth phase of water is a very, very, very important phase, I believe. I mean, you can get into all the aspects of it if you look up Dr. Gerald Pollack. He wrote a book, The Fourth Phase of Water. He's a very good friend of mine. He's actually coming on my masterclass in a few days and speaking. It is the stage in between liquid and solid. It's actually also starts to form in as water's beginning to rise, but before it's a solid, which is where I photograph my work. But it's also found in the stages of melting, and it's found within the cells. Our physical body turns H2O into H3O2, so it has slightly different properties in that it has an extra hydrogen and oxygen atom. It has a it is more viscous, so it's kind of more stretchy. It has negative charge, which means it's healthy. So that's why the healthy cells are negatively charged. It's why the earth is negatively charged too. It has the ability to absorb more light than regular water. This is a really important piece. This area of exclusion zone, which is another word for the fourth phase water inside of our cells, it excludes all solates. So essentially it's like a battery with a negative charge on one side and a positive charge on the other. And the way we get rid of positive charge in our body is through urination for the most part. So it has very different qualities. And so one of the things that I found very, very helpful was when I was speaking to an Indigenous woman, and she told me that she could speak to bees. Now, I recently shared this story at the annual water conference in Germany, where I was the last speaker of the conference. And I was a little nervous to share this story because it's not a science story at all. But I think the way in which it was received, where there were so many scientists and biologists and physicists that had this aha moment when I shared it. So this lady said she could speak to bees, and she would watch their hives for long periods of time. And eventually a bee came out and communicated to her and said, "We don't mind you looking at our hive, but please don't look at it for too long, because your conscious expression is putting too much light in the hive, and we like it to be darker." And I think that this is a really important piece, especially within my work, because what I focus on is putting conscious expression into water prior to freezing it. And then whatever I'm thinking about, I'm seeing crystallized in the imagery of the ice. And if you're putting more light into water, you're giving it more ability to actually absorb more. And especially when it turns into that four phase water, it's storing and holding more information. And I can get so much more into detail about my work and how it's evolved, and how I know that there are three ways in which water communicates. They are signature patterns, artistic expression, and then something I've been working on for 4.5 years that I call hydroglyphs, which are essentially ice symbols that are recognizable and repeatable, that I have discovered have specific word meanings. So, for example, I have hydroglyphs for the word creation. I have hydroglyphs for the word abundance. As also, I have them for imagination, for completion, for chemical. So I have 36 hydroglyphs, and each hydroglyph has layers of meaning. To say I have one, I have to use the same word influence and frozen the water using my technique and seeing the same symbol appear at least 50 times. So it takes a very long time, but I also have seen that they have layers of meaning. So for example, the winter also means change. So there are lots of different layers of meaning. For, I can get into that in another time because I've been speaking for a long time and I'm going to need to go soon. But I'm glad we've actually been able to have this conversation because I've shared a lot of things I don't often share in podcasts. So something a little different too.
Well, thank you so much for sharing these special stories with us. I've been so connected to you the whole time you've been speaking and really... Not that I am reliving these stories with you, of course, but I feel like I've been a fly on the wall in a sense, and it's been really mind expanding. And there's been so many themes that you've brought up in your responses that I, in ways, wanted to know more about, but I also sat with them, like the way that you see healing on an emotional level, and there's just so much in what you've said that I can't wait to listen and really slow down with your words. So thank you for this time with us today, and I hope to have you back on the show and continue going into more of your research.
That would be lovely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to For the Wild podcast. The music you heard today was by Strong Glenn Moon and Dobro. For the Wild is created by Ayana Young, Erica Ekram, Francesca Glassbell, and Julia Jackson.
A proud co-sponsor of the 20th annual Silverton MLK Observance on Monday, January 16th from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at the Silverton Grange in Silverton. The 20th annual Silverton MLK Observance features keynote speaker Joel Autry presenting Building Community Through Service and Sensitivity. The program also includes readings, sing-alongs, and a community potluck. That's the 20th annual Silverton MLK Observance on Monday, January 16th from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at the Silverton Grange, 201 Division Street, off South Water Street in Silverton, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.